Hello, my name is Ray Jefferson, and you're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU-FM. On this show, we sit down with those responsible for the creative and cultural development in Waco. I'm the Director of Marketing and Communications at Creative Waco, a nonprofit that exists to grow and support the arts in our community. Today's episode will be a little different from our usual format. World-famous street artist Bleck Lerat and American art collector Brian Grief visited Waco earlier this month to paint a series of original street art pieces on walls around Waco. During their trip, they stopped by the KWBU studio on Tuesday, November 13th, to talk about the ever-changing world of street art and why they made a stop here in Waco. Fiona Bond started things off with an explanation of how Banksy, Brian, and Bleck Lerat made their debuts here in Waco.
Thanks, Ray. Yes, we, of course, were really delighted that at Cultivate 712, we got to host the very first piece of Banksy street art to be exhibited in Texas, thanks to Brian, who's with us today. And, you know, we had always hoped that that would be something of a catalyst for Waco and that it would lead to other things. And I don't think we could possibly have foreseen that it would lead so quickly to this really fabulous opportunity to invite Bleck Lerat, who is really like the father of the modern street art movement, such a giant figure of the art history in the art world, actually the one that Banksy learned his technique from. And so the way that it came about is, as all good artistic movements generate from a number of good meals around a table and conversation around a table, it all starts with food. And when Brian was here, I hope he was impressed by what he saw in Waco in terms of this kind of embryonic and very vibrant art scene, emergent art scene, I should say. It's not embryonic because it's been going for some time, but this energetic and emergent art scene. And so many people enthusiastic to see more, hear more, do more in Waco. And he suggested that when other people were in town, when he had other artists who were going to be in the United States, would Waco be interested in hosting them and having them do things here? And in answer to that, Brian and I spent a couple of hours one day just driving around and seeing the number of walls in Waco that are blank canvases. And I know his comment was, you have a lot of walls. And we do. We have a fabulous opportunity in Waco to really carve out a cultural identity in a very interesting way. And so it just so happened that Bleck and his wife Sibyl were going to be visiting a couple of months after we exhibited the Banksy, or first exhibited the Banksy. And so at that point, Brian came back to Rebecca at Cultivate and said, well, do you think it would be possible to visit Waco as part of this tour? And of course, we said a big enthusiastic yes to that. And then it was a matter of just, you know, in a relatively short period of time, seeing who was interested. And the interest was overwhelming, which was really encouraging. And I think sows the seed for more of this kind of thing happening in Waco. And, you know, I have to say, we've been really impressed at how the business community has really responded to this opportunity and how the art community has embraced it. I mean, Bleck has been here for just a few hours and already he's met business leaders and he's met students. And on what I think is the coldest day of the year so far, we had people, you know, really a crowd of people outside watching him, which is pretty impressive because people don't come outside in Texas, in central Texas, in the cold. So we've been really encouraged at how much interest this has generated. And I think that's a testament to Brian really having a sense of what could happen in Waco, and also that Bleck is the perfect fit for a project like this and is also an incredibly generous person with his time and with his personality.
Thank you so much, Fiona, for that background. And with that, I'd like to welcome Bleck Lerat and Brian Grief to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for being here. We're really, really excited about the work that you guys are going to be accomplishing in just a few days here in Waco. So thank you for taking time out to come in and visit us here. So have you guys enjoyed your time so far? I know you've just gotten started. This is your first morning really getting out there and meeting people.
I enjoy it. Thank you. Yeah, I'm very happy to be here.
Good.
Thank you.
Great. So Bleck, I would like to start out just kind of, with, as we said, you've just basically started to kind of get into Waco and kind of get a feel for what's happening here. What are your first impressions of the city?
A peace city.
Yeah?
Yeah, really peace. I really think that people live in peace here, and it's a beautiful city, but really in peace, yeah. Quiet and peace and good things.
Awesome. Thank you. We're glad to hear that. Yeah, you guys did manage to come on one of the colder days that we have here. Usually it's blazing hot, so... you guys lucked out, but, so Brian, every time you come to Waco, it seems like you've got an incredible delivery to make. The first time it was Banksy's Hate Street Rat. And now you've brought us the very man who inspired Banksy to even, create street art. So, what do you find appealing about Waco? Why did you, decide to come back a second time and to kind of do some work here?
Well, that's easy. It's the enthusiasm of the people here. Okay. You know, when I was here and we installed the Hate Street Rat and we did the programs the very first week of the Hate Street Rat exhibition, I was very impressed with the people that turned out, the questions that they had, and just the general enthusiasm for, for art in Waco. And, meeting people like Rebecca at Cultivate and Fiona with Creative Waco, they really had a passion to do something with art in the city. And so, you don't see that kind of enthusiasm in major cities like New York and Los Angeles. I really, part of the goal of exhibiting the Hate Street Rat is to open street art to other parts of the country. There's lots of street art in New York and Miami and Los Angeles and San Francisco, but to get people excited and to bring artists like Bleck to places like Waco. And so it's the people here in Waco that makes Waco appealing to me.
That's so great to hear. And I think we all have Summer Shine from Luna Juice to thank for sparking this idea in the first place, because she was the one that first reached out to Brian. And her enthusiasm is so infectious. And she's been a really big part of this story, too. Brian, what's it like to travel from city to city with that Banksy piece, making possible what are probably defining moments in the creative lives of people all around the world?
It's been great, and that wasn't the original intent taking it down. My original intent, if you watch the documentary Saving Banksy, was to donate it to a museum and give it a private home. And when that didn't happen, Ava Boros, who was with me from the very beginning in the Saving Banksy project, suggested that we put it on tour. And every city we go to, the response is incredible. And what's really interesting is the response from young people. High school students, elementary school students, and university students show up. And then, I'll go in and usually do like an opening event or hang around for a couple of days. And I've been asked to speak at the University of Florida, the University of Windsor. I've done high schools and elementary schools in Indiana and Nevada and places like – and it's a real joy to be able to talk about the street art movement and the importance of the street art movement to young people.
I think it's really interesting that you point that out, because I remember when the Banksy piece first came here, all of the people I knew who were excited were people that were my age, mid-20s and younger. And then everyone who was kind of like, who is Banksy, was, older, and they were just like, not in touch with street art at all. But I think it's awesome that you are able to bring a piece that is exciting for younger people, as well as something that can maybe be even, new to older crowds. Yeah, thank you so much for bringing that.
Well, that said, it's interesting, because I'll never forget when we showed it in Kokomo, Indiana last year, they had 1,500 people standing in line. Kokomo's a very small town in Indiana, and they had 1,500 people in line, and the age range was from about 5 years old to about 85 years old, and I'm old, So people my age and older, as soon as they saw the piece and they started to research Banksy, they became converts.
Yeah.
Like my mother is a huge Banksy fan now and a huge street art fan and follows, you know, the street artists that I do projects with. So, you know, there is it's not a movement just for young people.
Yeah.
You know, it touches people of all ages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's incredible. So Bleck, I would like to talk a little bit about your technique just for a moment. You pioneered basically the use of stencils in street art. And you've inspired the way that many artists create around the world now. But when you first began to use that technique, were you at all concerned that people might think that because you're using stencils that you're taking away from, you know, the artistry of the work that you're doing?
Yeah, actually, one of my goals was to spread my technique all over the world. So I'm very happy that other people use my technique to express themselves on the world. Yes, it's a very easy technique, mm-hmm. Actually, you know, when you I take a photo and I work with Photoshop, and after that I cut the stencil. The first stencil actually was the hand on the wall of the caverns.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very easy to make.
Yeah.
And so the people used to mix water in their mouth
uh-huh.
and water and pigments
uh-huh.
and spread the water on the hand on
spit
the wall.
Art.
Yeah, spit. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's a very easy technique,
uh-huh.
and I'm very happy that other people use my technique. You know,
yeah.
Actually, it's my style. You
yeah.
know. To use this technique, and so this style is interesting for streets. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it fits very well in a street environment. You know, I think it might be a little odd to see really formal pieces of art on the sides of walls. So.
Well,
yeah.
You talk about. One of the reasons you started doing stencils because you, when you're doing a piece on the street, and this started as an illegal movement,
mm-hmm.
you have to do things fast.
Yeah,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't know in the United States, but in Paris, if you stay more than 10 minutes at the same place, you can be sure that police
yeah.
arrive. So you have to go very fast. You
yeah.
have to make it very fast. And so it's a fast technique, you know, because I prepare the stencil in my studio. And when the stencil is already done, it goes very fast. To make a rat in the street, it takes me 10 seconds, 5 seconds to make it. So... it's very useful. Yeah.
I'm really interested in unpacking a little bit more about the illegal side or the illegal origins of street art, and actually sometimes its controversial nature. Why do you think that the art form street art, while sometimes illegal, is useful in a valid way of creating art? What does it do that art in a gallery, for example, cannot do?
You know, for an artist, it's very difficult to show his own work. You know, when you, I remember when I was young, you know, before to start to work in the streets, I was creating my studio, but nobody came, only my family came in my studio to see my work and friends, and nobody had an, it was very difficult to show my work. So when I decided to make my work outside in the streets, I noticed that thousands and thousands of people would see my work in the street the day after. So what is most important for an artist to be seen? Nothing, you know. It's so important. So it makes me so happy to when I leave something in the street and the day after many, many, many people will see my work. That's the reason I'm working in the street.
And I know, Brian, you've talked too about the democratization of art and the fact that street art gives an accessibility that art hasn't necessarily had in the contemporary Western
context.
Yeah,
in the art world, and you talk about art history, art has always been intensely private. You know, artists would go in their private studios and create works, and if they were lucky, galleries would take the works and show them in the galleries. And a limited number of artists would be shown in museums. But for most people, walking into a gallery is intimidating. You know, I know a lot of people that don't like walking into galleries because they feel like they're being judged. Does this person have enough money to buy art? Are they in here just to look? And there's always that feeling. Street art is the first art movement where the artist said, I'm going to put what I do out there for free for the public to see. You know, whether I do it illegally or someone commissions me to do a wall, I want to share my process and share what I do with the public. And that's not really happened before in a large scale way in any other art movement in the history of art. It's the first time this has happened. And it's opened up art and opened the eyes of people to art that they wouldn't normally be aware of. And then you layer on top of that social media. You know, street art has existed for a while, and it exploded with social media because people started taking photos of these wonderful murals and paintings that were on the street and graffiti and sharing them on social media, and it opened the entire world to street art and graffiti. The other thing that, you know, I'm a big believer that street art and graffiti are two of the most important art movements in the history of art. Every other art movement before these two art movements was very regional and very local. Impressionism was really based and predominantly in France. Pop art was based almost exclusively in New York. The graffiti and street art are the first two art movements that are absolutely worldwide. You go to any major city anywhere in the world and you see street art and graffiti. And not just major cities. I travel a lot, and you see street art and graffiti in small towns now, you know, in different parts of the United States and Canada. I was in Windsor, Canada, and in Windsor, Canada, there were street art works by artists from Australia and England and Germany. And that hasn't happened in any art movement before. It's out there for everybody.
Would you mind taking a second just to kind of differentiate between street art and graffiti, just so that there's clarification on what the difference is between those two things?
Sure. There's a real clear difference. Graffiti is a subculture. Graffiti artists come up with a moniker. You know, I work with a graffiti artist out of LA, and his graffiti name is Risk, R-I-S-K. And when he does graffiti on the street, that's what he writes, R-I-S-K. He'll do it in different colors, he'll do it in different font styles, different sizes, and do it in different places. That's graffiti. Street art can vary in subject matter and form. Street artists do a lot more than just their graffiti name.
Got it.
That said, most street artists started off as graffiti artists.
Okay.
A lot of them started off as graffiti artists and have evolved into doing street art. The other thing that's really important is graffiti artists do their work. It's funny, they'll say, we don't care what civilians think.
Mm-hmm.
Graffiti artists don't do their art for the public. They do it to impress other graffiti artists.
Okay.
Street artists want everybody to respect, enjoy, and appreciate what they do. So there's a very clear difference between graffiti and street art.
Sure. Okay. So in the case of viewers who might be uncomfortable, just kind of going back to that controversial nature of street art, for people who are uncomfortable with like the legality of street art and whatnot, how do you suggest that they approach this art form to maybe kind of just be, you know, a little bit more accepting or a little bit kind of just have a greater understanding of what is actually happening?
Well, first of all, I think the public has accepted street art.
Okay.
It's rare now that artists like Bleck have to do anything illegal.
Okay.
Their art is so wanted and appreciated that building owners provide legal walls. So on the street art side, there are still some artists, generally artists that are starting out and want to be seen, that will do street art pieces illegally.
Okay.
But I would say probably, you know, it's funny because before like 2006, I would say that 80% of all street art was done illegally and 20% was done legally. Now it's about 90% legally and about 10% illegally. And, you know, street artists for the most for the most part, try to be respectful. They're not going to they're not going to do something on the front of a building. They'll do it in an alleyway or a dumpster. They'll try and do it in a place where it's not really damaging. And they're not out to vandalize and destroy things. They just want to leave little gifts, little presents, something interesting to see. And, you know, that was one of the points of the movie Saving Banksy was, before you look at it and say, you know, how dare you paint on my building, take a look at it and appreciate it as an art form and leave it up and let people see what the reaction to it is. The other thing I would say is we're headed to, Black and I are headed to Austin this weekend to do a fundraiser for the Hope Foundation. And what they do is they've built and they have it's called a paint park, which is similar to skate parks. You know, when skateboarding first started, everybody, you know, the skateboarders would skate wherever they wanted, and it caused problems and people were upset. And a lot of cities built skate parks where skateboarders could go and skate. And it greatly reduced the number of people, you know, skateboarding down the steps of City Hall and that sort of thing. And so there are organizations now that are building paint parks, which provide places for young street artists, young graffiti artists to go and really develop their craft and develop their artwork. And if people provide legal places for street artists and graffiti artists to paint, they'll take that opportunity. If there are no legal walls, open walls for people to paint, they'll try and find the best place possible to share what they do with the public.
Fascinating. Well, Bleck, I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about the messaging of your pieces. As street artists often do, you create pieces that provide commentary on politics and social issues. When you make something more subtle, like a dancer or a musician, what are you hoping that viewers will learn about you or about the world through your pieces?
Actually, I want to make a present to the people, you know. So I'm working. I don't want to aggress people at all, you know. It's a present that I make to the people. I'm working on social problems sometimes. Sometimes I'm working, for example, in France, we had a French journalist who was kidnapped in France, in Iraq, in 2005, and I make a big propaganda for her, you know, to remind to the people that she was a prisoner in Iraq. And so I worked for about 2 months pasting posters and making graffiti about her to provoke a reaction from the journalists and from the people. And the reaction was there, you know. She was released, not by my work, but she was released after, because people took conscious, they take aware, you know, that she was prisoner there. I met her once she was released. I met her and she said to me, thank you. Or I make some propaganda for the homeless people, because we have a big problem of homeless people in France, also all over the world. There is a big problem with the homeless people. So I made a big propaganda to provoke something to the people, a reaction, you know, to the people for the homeless people.
How have you seen street art change since, you know, you first started creating those kinds of works?
It changed because it has a value now.
It
costs money to buy. When I started, it was for free. Now it has a big value because if you have heard about Banksy sale, mm-hmm. it's something like that, $1 million. So it changed a lot of things now because many people are interested by this work because the money it represents.
Sure.
Yeah.
What do you think has, and Brian, I'd love for you to weigh in on this too, what do you guys think has caused that change for this art form that was once illegal and not wanted to suddenly be worth millions of dollars?
Yes, please.
Well, I think there are three things. The first is social media.
Okay.
street, like I said, street artists, Basquiat and Keith Haring were doing street art, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s. And those pieces, you know, Basquiat pieces, no, not a lot of his street art pieces survive. There are a lot of Keith Haring subway drawings and that sort of thing that survive that sell for, you know, $500,000 or more. So it had value before. The street artists that came after Basquiat and Haring, is when social media, when it started to spread with social media and people saw what these artists create and the impact that they have, it had value. The other two things that really helped the movement explode, I think, can be attributed to two artists, and that's Banksy. And going back to, you know, the division wall pieces that he did in Palestine, which got international coverage and raised awareness, and then his movie Exit Through the Gift Shop in 2010 raised the awareness even more and generated all kinds of interest. And then Shepard Fairey. And if you're not familiar with Shepard Fairey, Shepard designed the Hope poster for President Obama in 2008, which became an iconic symbol, you know, for the Obama campaign. And then also because of his Obey projects, his Andre the Giant Obey projects. It's a clothing line now, and it's stunning to me. Anywhere you go and anywhere I go, the number of people that wear Obey, mm-hmm. Obey hats and Obey hoodies and Obey shirts. And so those two artists really got people to look at street art and street artists as not just vandals, but people that do you know, high value, high interest art. And you really started to see galleries and other people, collectors, start to get interested in buying street art beginning in about 2005, 2006. And it really started to take off in about 2010 with the movie Exit Through the Gift Shop and some of the things that Shepard was doing.
Wow, that's so interesting. Well, we're really thankful that you guys are here. I guess lastly, just to wrap things up, what qualities do you see in communities that are, you know, just being environments where the arts can thrive? What sorts of things do you think really help that move along?
To me, it's the people. You know, if the people are hungry for art and the people are passionate about art in the community and making art available in different forms, you know, in public spaces, those are the communities that really thrive and really have interesting art programs. And there are a number of cities out there. Gainesville, Florida is an example. Reno, Nevada is another example. They're not big cities. They're not New York, LA, Miami. You know, they're medium-sized cities, but the people there are passionate and want art in public places and want to share art with, you know, with their residents.
Brian and Blake, thank you so much for the amazing work that you're doing here in Waco. Our community is very grateful to be visited by such powerhouses in the street art world. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for a recap of this program. Catch the next episode of Conversations with Creative Waco on Friday, December 28th, when I'll share more stories of leaders in the artistic and cultural sector here in Waco. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU FM. I'm your host, Ray Jefferson. Thanks for tuning in.